On this edition of Discovering Virginia, you'll discover an institution that's been in Richmond for 185 years, but until relatively recently, few people have visited. In the next few minutes, you'll hear about the Virginia Historical Society. It's on the boulevard at Kensington in the Museum District. Dr. Paul Levengood is the immediate past president and chief executive officer of the Virginia Historical Society. Paul Levengood earned his doctorate in history, and he applied that background during his tenure at the Virginia Historical Society. Paul, was I accurate in saying that until relatively recently, few people have visited the Virginia Historical Society?
You're right, Lou. It's really only been about a generation where we've been what you might call a public institution. We're a fully private nonprofit, but we didn't really have much to welcome the public in to see until really the mid-1980s, late 1980s. And then there was a real sea change in attitude that took us from being essentially a private, learned, scholarly society to a multifaceted educational institution that has exhibits and school programs and lectures and all sorts of things to which we really want the public to come.
Was there a change in the mission of the Virginia Historical Society at that time?
There was.
In the 80s?
There was, yeah. The board at the time was looking around and seeing all these institutions that had, like ours, that had really opened their doors and had taken on a much more public role. And they said, you know what, there's no reason why this place with these incredible treasures that we have here should not be playing a more prominent public educational and cultural role, and that's what they did. And my predecessor as president and CEO, Charlie Bryan, who some of your audience might remember, kind of took up that ball and ran with it, and we've been running ever since.
I want to ask you about some of the exhibits that you have, but you've overseen a major modernization of the facility in your time, in the time you've been president and CEO.
We have. We just finished, really last summer, early fall, a $20 million renovation of the building that included a whole host of things that if you come in and visit, you'll see. So brand new gallery spaces, a new entrance, a new education center, and then things that you won't see but you'll appreciate, things like making sure the air conditioning system is all up to date. So when you walk in on a hot summer day, it feels pretty comfortable inside. So, yeah, it was a huge project. It took us basically a year and a half, but we're done, open for business, and looking for people to come visit us.
You have a new gift shop. You have a theater.
We do.
I mean, I was blown away by this theater that has all the modern conveniences in it.
We do. It's we call it the Robbins Family Forum. It has almost 500 seats. It has a film that shows every half an hour called, ironically enough, Virginia Voices, which is basically made up of modern-day Virginians talking about the state, talking about how they came to be in Virginia. That runs every half an hour. We do our lectures in there. It's a fabulous facility.
You mentioned seeing the place, and you have made major strides in making the Virginia Historical Society accessible. On a recent Discovering Virginia program, I talked with Andy Talkoff, who is your vice president for programs.
Right.
About a collaboration with VCU's Virtual Curation Laboratory to make 3D images that people can actually touch. If they are sight impaired, they can actually touch.
Absolutely. And, you know, shame on us, but until someone, a visually impaired visitor, told us, you know, there's really nothing for me to experience here, we hadn't thought a great deal about what it might be that we could do to enrich an experience from someone who could not see the objects that are on display, because we think very visually. You put a painting on display, or you put an artifact out there, and then the text caption tells the story of that artifact. Using 3D printing, which is, you know, just grown by leaps and bounds, allows us to do things that we never could do before. You don't want someone handling, you know, an artifact, a 300-year-old artifact. But if you make a duplicate of it, you print it, and allow them to touch that and feel its dimensions and feel its shape and get a sense for it, then the verbal or the written description makes a lot more sense.
It comes alive.
Absolutely. It was a real interesting step for us to take.
So you are now actually welcoming those with a sight impairment.
We are, and obviously not everything on display, you know, is available in this way, but we're trying to grow what we can offer people who cannot necessarily see what's on show.
Well, give us a walkthrough, if you will, of the permanent exhibits that you have all the time.
Well, our lead permanent exhibit, we don't call it permanent, we call it long-term, because as we all know, nothing is forever. It's called The Story of Virginia, which a brand new story of Virginia was a part of this big renovation project. So it's about 10,500 square feet. It is 16,000 years of history. So from pre-European contact, so native Virginia peoples, all the way up until the present day. So it is a walk through, 16,000 years of Virginia history as told through a couple of hundred artifacts. There are interactive experiences, so, things you can listen to and things you can manipulate manually. It is it's a fabulous way to introduce someone to the state's history, because it's the only place in Virginia where you can come and do a survey of all Virginia history in one stop. You might think about all the wonderful historical assets in the state, but they're all, Monticello or Mount Vernon or a Civil War battlefield. They're very rooted in a specific time. But you come to the VHS, and The Story of Virginia tells you all of Virginia history. So that's our biggest long-term exhibit, but we also have long-term installations like our very well-known Confederate mural series that was actually commissioned when the building was opened in 1912 by a predecessor organization of the VHS, and these monumental murals by a French artist named Charles Hofbauer, massive things. And we've just finished a three-year-long conservation project to clean them, repair them, relight them. Those are always a showstopper when you come in.
When you say massive,
We're talking 30 feet long, 15 feet high, enormous, enormous paintings. They're monumental in scale. So those are always on display. We have exhibits, long-term exhibits on Virginia weapons, which we have a very fine collection of, and Virginia decorative arts and silver. So a little bit of something for everybody, along with the changing exhibits that I think we'll talk about in a little bit.
Well, yes, you've just opened one on football. Talk about that.
It is an absolutely fascinating exhibit. It's called Gridiron Glory, and it is put on by the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which you may know is in Canton, Ohio. And a lot of these things that were donated to the Pro Football Hall of Fame have not been out of Canton since that time. And they put together what is in some ways a crystallized, boiled-down version of the Hall of Fame. So you come in and you see a Lombardi Super Bowl trophy, and you see, Red Grange's, artifacts from Red Grange and early football players, all the way up to, the Tom Brady's and, Russell Wilson's of today. So it is more than 100 years of football history told through more than 200 objects, interactives. It is absolutely jam-packed. So if you're a football fan, you have to come see it. It is on display. It just opened this weekend, and it's on display to the day after Labor Day. So all summer, it's a great opportunity as everyone is getting ready for the football season to start in the fall. This is a way to come and learn in a really fun way all about pro football's amazing history in the United States.
And just about the time the football exhibit leaves, you're opening another one in October.
We are. This is very exciting as well. It's called The Private Jefferson. And it is, many Virginians don't know this, and the ones that do know this, it probably gets them hot under the collar, but many incredible things that Thomas Jefferson created in his lifetime. Drafts of the Declaration of Independence in his hand, the original plans for Monticello, private correspondence, you name it, left Virginia after his death. One of his grandchildren married into the Coolidge family in Massachusetts and took many of these things with them. And they came into the collections of the Massachusetts Historical Society in the 19th century and have remained there ever since. So these things that a lot of Virginians think really ought to be in Virginia are going to be back. They're going to be in Virginia for about 3 months in this exhibit called The Private Jefferson. So you'll be able to see things that have not been seen in Virginia since Jefferson's time. And these are some of the touchstone pieces of Jefferson's life and really of American history. It just incredible things. I mean, to see Jefferson's draft of the Declaration of Independence, the one that he presented to the Continental Congress, that they then amended. So you get to see some of the things Jefferson originally wanted in there that did not make the final cut. It's really fascinating, and I think all Virginians will want to come see this in October.
You're hearing from Dr. Paul Levengood, who is the president and chief executive officer of the Virginia Historical Society. Paul, talk about the library and the research facilities that you have.
Well, we've been, as you mentioned, we've been around since 1831, so 185 years, and in that entire time, we have been collecting documents, artifacts relating to Virginia's past. So you can imagine, over the years, we've accumulated in excess of 9 million pieces. And that's right, 9 million.
It begs the question, where do you store all of that?
Well, they're all stored in our headquarters building. But the neat thing about it is, those 9 million pieces, many of them documents, letters, diaries, various pieces of family paper, correspondence, are available if you are doing research. You know, we have a lot of people who come in doing research on a specific topic, many people doing family history, all sorts of things. You know, everyone, it seems these days, is a genealogist with Ancestry.com and all these things, and people are looking into their family background in ways that they never did before. And we are a treasure trove of a resource. If you if you think your family has some sort of history in Virginia, chances are there's something in our collections that relates to that family. We've been, as I said, collecting for close to 200 years, so it's a massive amount of material. But it is available to you. People don't really, I think this is going to be so, but you know, you come in, you register in the library, you fill out a slip for what you want, it's brought to you, and unless it is so delicate that handling it will damage it, you get that original letter, that 18th century letter that you can hold in your hands and read and appreciate and use for your research project. It is really extraordinary. It puts people in direct contact with the past, and it's a very important part of what we do.
That really is a change in the mission from the original Virginia Historical Society in the 1800s.
Absolutely. Now, for a long time, you know, you had to be a member to use anything at the Historical Society, and membership was by invitation only. So it was a self-selecting thing. And then for a while, we were a little more open, but you had to come as someone with some scholarly credentials. You know, you basically had to write and say, I want to come use the collection. I'm a graduate student, or I'm a professor, I'm doing something, and they would then sort of sign off on you and let you come use materials. These days, all you need is photo ID. You come and show us your photo ID, and we register you, and you have access to basically everything in our collection.
Well, if I'm hearing you correctly, not only do people have access if they wish it, but you make it easy to help them find what they want.
Absolutely. Our staff is incredibly skillful at getting researchers what they need. So if someone comes in and says, well, you know, I'm looking at this family, and you know, our staff is so good, they'll be able to say, well, you know, that family was kin to this family and this family, and so you might want to look in these collections as well. And, you know, did you know that they not only had a, you know, family farm in Mecklenburg County, but there was another branch of the family that lived in Charlotte County? And, you know, these kind of connections that people come away now, you know, knowing much more than they did when they arrived.
It's certainly another resource for people who are researching genealogy.
Absolutely.
But you have other things that they can research as well, other than genealogy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have, it's great in the spring, we have every senior at St. Gertrude's High School over there doing research papers based on our collections. Members of the media are there frequently doing background research for stories. You know, professional historians who are there, or people who are just, you know, looking up the history of their house or their neighborhood, or, you know, those kinds of things that people do for all sorts of reasons. You know, history is something that many people are passionate about, and they want to dive into it and not just read what someone else has to say, but get back to the sources themselves and really understand the past. And that's what we offer.
You sound passionate, Paul.
Well, I love history. It's what I trained to do, and that's what we do at the VHS, so.
All through this interview, we have talked about making it accessible to those who might otherwise not be able to access it. Some people who have a sight impairment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not everything is that way, but you've certainly gone a large way down the road to making that happen.
and we'll continue to do so. You know, it's new territory for us, so we need to do it in a thoughtful manner. But yes, we're absolutely committed to making everything we do, whether it's our digital presence, which is growing larger and larger online, or in-house, to make them as accessible to as many people as possible.
We've talked about many things. Is there anything we have left out? Anything that you want people to know, understand about the Virginia Historical Society, or to take advantage of?
Well, I think one of the things I hope people will take advantage of, and this is something that, you know, someone with a hearing impairment can take every bit of as much advantage as anyone else can, is our incredible lecture programs. We do, oh gosh, in a given year, we do a couple dozen, 24 to 30 lectures, many of them in the middle of the day, some in the evening, by incredible historians and authors, people who come in and bring the past alive through our lecture program, which is an incredibly popular part of what we do. I mentioned that theater space that earlier.
Yes.
That's where these lectures take place. And we routinely get crowds of 300, 400 people in there for these lectures. So I would urge your audience, take up membership, which is the best value in town. You know, membership means you get into lectures for free, every special exhibit for free. But if you're not a member, at least come check us out. The lectures are a bargain, but maybe they'll make you want to join when you realize what you get access to on a year-by-year basis.
I'm glad you mentioned membership, which is certainly available and a bargain. But the basic admission is free.
Basic admission is free. We feel very strongly that there shouldn't be any barrier for a member of the community to come in and experience certainly the long-term exhibits that we have on display. The special exhibits, because they're very expensive to bring here, do have a ticketed charge. But as I mentioned, you become a member and you get access to all those special exhibits for free. You get the lectures for free. You get discounts in the shop. You get access to our bus trips. We have monthly bus trips that go all over the state to, often places you can't go by yourself, private homes and things like that. So lots of benefits to membership. And I will say the biggest benefit to most, I think in most people's mind, it's not just what it gives you, but what membership gives other people. Membership helps us keep educational programs when school groups come, helps keep those free. We don't want any barrier for the kids who, you know, need to learn the lessons of history, not just for their SOL tests, but to be good citizens. We don't want there to be any barriers for them. So when you're supporting us through your membership or your annual gift, that also makes that experience accessible to the next generation of budding historians and budding citizens.
So people could access it for free to get kind of a sample of what they can have for a membership.
Absolutely.
But there's no barrier to coming in for free.
Absolutely not. And in fact, we make it really easy. The parking is free. There's a lot of people worry about parking. You can come park in our lot for free, come in the building, and just check us out. And I hope you'll see what you like. I hope you'll want to become a member, and I hope you'll want to come back.
Let's talk about where it is and make sure that people know the hours and the location.
Well, we are open 10 to 5, 7 days a week. We are on the corner of Boulevard and Kensington, as you mentioned. If a landmark is necessary, that is the same big double city block as the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. So they are on the Grove Avenue corner. We're on the Kensington Avenue corner. But the great thing about it is you can park once, go to both museums, walk to both museums, which is really a really special thing that people in Richmond, I hope, understand how special it is to be able to go to both these museums. So we're right there on the corner of Boulevard and Kensington. We're easy access to I-95 and 195 and the Downtown Expressway. It's really a great location.
Thank you, Paul. Dr. Paul Levengood is the immediate past president and Chief Executive Officer of the Virginia Historical Society. You've been hearing about the Virginia Historical Society on Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.